Prabhu Nityananda,
Sri Advaita
Gadadhar, Srivasadir Gaur Bhaktavrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Hare Rama,
Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is Bhagavad Gita as it is. Okay. Chapter 3. It's called Karma Yoga. Please repeat. Jayasi Chait
Karmanaste
Jayasi Chait Karmanaste Jayasi Chait Karmanaste Matabudir Janardana Matabudir Janardana Matabudir Janardana Jayasi Chait Karmanaste
Jayasi
Chait Karmanaste Matabudir Janardana Tatkim Tatkim Karmani Gore Tatkim Karmani Gore Tatkim Karmani Gore Mam Niyojayasi Keshava Jayasi Chait Karmanaste Matabudir Janardana Tatkim Karmani Gore Mam Niyojasi Keshava Jai Babaji. So your mind is just like your muscles. The more you use them, the more you practice detailed motions, the more they become fine. You can memorize, one person memorized the entire Los Angeles phone book. Yeah. I memorized 25 pages of last names from the Los Angeles phone book. Yep. All the last names, 25 pages. Want to hear them? Smith. Yeah. But it's, there are many things. See, we're losing this ability because of moron. Sorry, micron. Demons. Right? You're losing the ability to remember things. But it's with some practice you can memorize all these things. Hundreds of phone numbers, thousands of verses. All these practice, yeah? If you just use your hands like a horse's hoof, like this, you never develop all these fine discriminations, details, muscles. It's the same way when you practice, like, you see, it's very much involved with rhythm, right? When we're chanting a certain rhythm, your mind can put things. Then if you also start chanting with meaning, different kinds of tones for meaning and stuff, then you can really, put it together like that. So this is Smriti. And if it enters into your heart in the time of death, you take it with you, right? The next birth when you're born, you're chanting Bhagavad Gita verses when you're 1 year old. Right away, you memorize the whole Bhagavad Gita. Jayasi Chait Karmanaste Matabudir Janardana Tatkim Karmani Ghore Mamnyo Jasi Keshavan. Arjuna said, "Oh Janardana, oh Keshava, and why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruity work?" So in the last part of Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, Krishna is talking about what kind of yoga? Buddhi yoga. Yeah. Mata Buddhir Janardana. So why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think intelligence is better than fruity work? So he's telling him, don't just engage in activities for different results. Like the animal. The dog thinks about getting this, getting that. I was mentioning there's one cat who comes to your temple courtyard at 1 o'clock in the morning. He goes all along the edge of the wall like that. It's amazing. White cat, goes out again like that. Yeah. So he has his intelligence about how to get his fruitive activities. He's a fruitive actor. He's a karmi. Like that. Yeah. But Krishna says, don't become absorbed in these things. The Buddhists have many phrases like this. One Buddhist phrase is, you should look at life from 2 inches behind your eyeballs. There you go. It's okay. Yeah. Don't just react. Just look at life from 2 inches behind your eyeballs. So try it right now. You doing it? Yeah? Got to be a psychologist to do this, right? Engineers can't do this. Psychologists can do this, yeah. But then you start, yeah, because if something happens, your eyes react, you move like that. But if you're back like that, then you're watching your eyes watch it. Yeah? So this is buddhi, intelligence. Make sure mind is engaged before tongue is in action. Right? Make sure mind is engaged before tongue is in motion, like that. Yeah? So all these phrases are the Buddhist side. This means be intelligent. Don't become absorbed in your senses, sense objects, reacting like an animal. I smell this, I do that. So that's all the yoga Krishna is giving in the second chapter. And Arjuna is saying, okay, if you think that it's better just to be thoughtful about things, to think about things, not just react for results, then why are you telling me just to go and just hop into this battle? And then he says, my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. In the previous chapter, as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained. That is Sankhya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, control of the senses by intelligence, work without fruitive desire, and the position of the neophyte. This is all presented unsystematically. A more organized outline of the path will be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna therefore wanted to clear up these apparently confusing matters so that any common man could accept them without misinterpretation. Although Krishna had no intention of confusing Arjuna by any jugglery of words, Arjuna could not follow the process of Krishna consciousness, either by inertia or by active service. In other words, by his questions, he is clearing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students who seriously want to understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. And what is the mystery of Bhagavad Gita? Right here. Doing your dharma for Krishna, your karma, your dharma. Because this is described, this means ordinary, civil, decent human activities, right? You should be a decent mother, you should be a decent son, you should be a decent father, husband, sister, policeman, general, president, right? Merchant, yeah? You shouldn't put rocks in the rice, right? Yeah? On and on. Every publicist, basically, everybody knows what is a good man. He doesn't lie, he doesn't cheat, he's clean, he's simple, he's kind to other people. It's not a Jewish or a Hindu or a Muslim thing. Everybody knows what is a good man, a brahmana. It's without this, you can't even start to talk about religion. Right? So, I'm Muslim, I'm Hindu, I'm Krishna. Well, it's meaningless unless you're a piece of good person. And all these things are just formalities for a certain other purpose, not good purpose. So, here in Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is telling him is chapter 330, Mayi Karmani Sarvani. I think it's the first time Krishna explains it so clearly. Mayi Sarvani Karmani. Just do all your karma, your kshatriya karma, for me. Sacrifice results to me. And that's the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Somebody once compared karma to taking a full swing on a golf ball in a tile bathroom, right? Not very intelligent, you know? Like that. Wham! You know? And you keep on doing this all day long, like that would come out of there, like that. Wow, you know? Pretty stupid, you know? Yeah, but I keep on doing it again and again. Insanity means doing the same thing the same way you've always done it, expecting a different result, right? Same thing again and again. This is karma, right? And so you recognize the deficiency of karma, and Arjuna recognizes that. Karma means I'm going to get something for myself in a fair fashion, you know? But what happens? Bhishma has to die, Drona has to die, all my cousins' wives have to go blubbering and crying because their husbands are dead like that. And I may be fighting with my cousins over things, you know, man things. Right? Why should all their wives be crying, looking at me like that, you know? So he realizes the deficiency of karma. That vikarma means bad activities, cheating, all these kind of things. But karma means even following the rules and regulations like that. And so, but it's for me still, selfish conception of me. So he gives that up. Then he wants to engage in inertia, just do nothing. You know, drop down his bow, become free from all these things, become a jnani, a renunciate, right? A stoic. So many kinds of philosophers talking about this. A jada yogi. What is a jada yogi? What is jada? Huh? Yes, stone. One time in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he's sitting here, deities are here, nice courtyard. And during the morning time, during the lecture time, so many people visit our temple like that. It's very common in Vrindavan, you're visiting temples, and very nice, you know. And so one time about 15 jada yogis came in, and there are many different groups in Vrindavan, many groups. These guys practice of yoga. They sit in the blazing sun in the summer. They sit in the rain in the winter. People insult them and spit on them. They're like a stone. And this way they tolerate, you know, all the different problems in life, and they're free from being exploited by the material nature. Jada yoga. So they came in and Prabhupada started talking about yukta vairagya. Vairagya, renunciation, yukta. But what it means is to use everything for Krishna. That's real renunciation. So that's the secret of Bhagavad Gita and a message to everybody. You know. So he's talking about, you know, real renunciation means to use everything for Krishna. Not to give up anything. If you're intelligent, you can use everything for Krishna. Even the atomic bomb. Like that. You know, yeah. So it takes intelligence, is the point. So he was, you know, and every time after Prabhupada's lectures, there was usually cookies or some sweet balls after the lecture to pass out to the children and other people, you know. So Prabhupada finished his whole lecture and he said, so, you can get free from the exploitation of material nature by tolerating the onslaught of the heat and cold, summer and winter, rain and drought, by honor and dishonor. You can get free from the exploitation of material nature by these kind of activities. But personally, I plan to go back home, back to Godhead, by eating sweet balls. Yeah. So this is many people think that Bhagavad Gita says, do your duty because it's your duty, without desire for results. And that's where is it? It's 247, right? 247, that's Buddha Yoga. It's really the only explanation of what Buddha Yoga is, that one verse. Like that. He says you have a right to do your duty, your dharma, but you can't be attached to the results. And never think that you independently are the cause of those results. Yeah, like that. Very simple. So many people think that's the whole message of Bhagavad Gita, like that. Do your duty because it's your duty. And then Arjuna is confused. Right? Yeah. Krishna says, don't become engaged in these selfish, fruitive activities, like that, blind fruitive activities. Always remain thoughtful about things. And so then Krishna says, then, so fight. So Arjuna is confused. What do you want me to do? You want me to be a Buddhist? You know? Or you want me to be a Karmi? Like that. What's going on? Yeah. In the previous chapter, as a prelude to Bhagavad Gita, many things were explained. Sankhya, Buddhi, control of the senses. It's all presented in an unsystematic fashion. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna therefore wanted to clear up the apparently confusing matters so any common man would not misinterpret them. Okay, so what does Bhagavan say? You know? Right here. Loke urshmi dvi vidha nishta pura proktra mayanagaha. Jnana yogina sankhyanam karma yogina yoginam. See, it's jnana yogina sankhyanam karma yogina yoginam. Krishna said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical, philosophical speculation. It's the Buddhism. The jnanis, they look at everything, analyze it, understand what's happening like that. You know, you can't become a Buddhist without becoming an expert logician. Very, very. This is why when people try and catch the Dalai Lama, these newspaper reporters say, do you believe in God or not? And he says, what do you mean by God? They never, because they're trained in how it's this logical, hair-splitting, everything else like that, to analyze the world. Yeah? Some people are inclined to understand by philosophical speculation, analytical speculation, and others by devotional service. So it says yoga yogena, but later on it's very clear that yoga means bhakti yoga. But probably right from the very beginning is giving this explanation like that. In the second chapter, verse 39, the Lord explained two kinds of procedures, namely Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga, or Buddhi Yoga. In this verse, the Lord explains the same more clearly. Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of the Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of the nature of spirit and matter, is a subject matter for persons who are inclined to speculate and understand things by experimental knowledge and philosophy. The other class of men work in Krishna consciousness, as it is explained in verse 61 of the second chapter. The Lord has explained also in the 39th verse that by working by the principles of Buddhi Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, one can be relieved from the bonds of action. And furthermore, there is no flaw in the process. The same principle is more clearly explained in the 61st verse. That is, Buddhi Yoga is to depend entirely on the Supreme, or more specifically on Krishna. And in this way, all the senses can be brought under control very easily. Therefore, both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is just mental speculation. The ultimate goal is Krishna, because the philosophers who are also sincere in searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna. This is also stated in Bhagavad Gita. What's the verse? In the end, they come to Krishna after searching for a long time. Text number 1863. Seven something, I think. Yeah. Seven.
Yes, in
first part of the seventh chapter. Okay. Pretty good. Okay. Master's Award. Better to guess than. Yeah. If you remain silent, people will think you're a fool. Right? Speak, remove all doubt, as Abraham Lincoln said. Yeah, but he can be corrected. Okay. This is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relationship to the super self. So Bhagavad Gita doesn't go much beyond Krishna as the super self, you know, the soul of all souls, right? He's also a butter thief, right? You know, muck and chore. But Bhagavad Gita doesn't talk about that much. He just talks about Krishna as the soul of all souls, the master of the universe, the knower of everything, the cause of all causes, the friend of everybody, like that. Yeah? Not much detail about his personality, but it's enough here to get out of the material world. The indirect process is philosophical speculation, by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness. And the other process is directly connecting everything with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend upon purifying the senses by philosophical process. Krishna consciousness is itself the purifying process. And by the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. Right? So you have a desire to work on automobiles. One devotee, Jayananda, he appears even to be like a Nitya Siddha personality. A very incredible person. He was a Shudra, right? But intelligent Shudra. So he became a mechanical engineer, like that. And his grandfather was a Christian pastor, like that. So obviously, from his very young age, he liked religion, things like that. So he graduated from in engineering from the University of Minnesota or something like that. Didn't know what to do with his life. He came out to California where the hippie movement was going on. Maybe there's something with this. Driving his taxi around, and he still didn't know what to do. And he said he read in the paper about the Hare Krishnas and their guru and some things glorifying Prabhupada a little bit in the newspaper. And so he thought, well, maybe they have some answer, you know. And so you say, but I'm so miserable. You know, but what am I doing? What's life all about? And you see, he was even crying a little bit about how unhappy he was. So next day he went to the temple, and he asked about if he could see Swamiji and this and that. And the boy said, well, yeah, I'm sure, come with us. You know. So he took him up to Prabhupada's room. You know, yes, Swamiji, there's someone to see you. Bring him in. So as soon as he came in, Prabhupada looked at him and said, bring prasadam. He said, Prabhupada always could tell. You know, what you needed. It's a very big person like that. So he said, Prabhupada, oh, please come in, sit down. What are you doing? So I'm driving taxi cab like that. He said, oh, you have a job? It's like that. That's amazing. Yes, you know. Oh, you're an engineer? My God, wonderful. You know. So then Prabhupada was asking a little bit about his background. And what, you know, he explained like his position. He was curious about what his life and these things. And he said, and Prabhupada explained it very, very simply. He said, the purpose of life is to be happy. And happiness means, you know, associating with Krishna and engaging in his activities, his work. That's our natural position like that. He's our leader. And then we become very happy serving him, cooperating with him. And he said, it was very simple, very clear. The food was good. And Prabhupada was very friendly. That was it. His life, at that point, was just, you know, 90% of his life was all taken care of at that point. But there's so many details to learn about this, you know. Everybody says, serve me, right? George Bush, Saddam Hussein, you know, Bill Gates, everybody, you know. I mean, right, Bill Gates, you can work, what is it? You know, 18 hours a day for Microsoft, right? If you want, flexi hours, right? Yeah. Yeah, you can. People work there. They say Microsoft has always, you know, tennis courts and swimming pools and different things for our employees. But people work there, so you'll never see anybody there. Because you're just, you know, working, you know, 6 days a week, you know, 14 hours a day, sometimes like that, to get the project done on time. And then to reward everybody, they have a company party. They all go and play bumper cars together and drink beer and eat pizza. And they spend $150 on the employee like that, you know. Back to work on Monday, you know, like that. Yeah. So, you know, but some people are, you know, some people are like this, or in the mode of passion. Yes, Bill Gates is my ideal in life. He's the person I'm going to follow. You know. So Krishna says, do it for me. Right? But who is Krishna? Right? Why should we do it for him? So fourth chapter, Krishna will start to describe that. You know, before he describes himself here as a liberated soul, like other liberated souls, distinct from those engaged in Maya. You know. But he doesn't describe himself as a source of all beings, inexhaustible, a Jopi son, Avyayatma. So fourth chapter, he really begins to describe he's different than other people. And then this sixth chapter, he goes back to different ways to know him. You know, one way is by hearing from the scriptures, one way is by yoga, by meditation, by introspection, like that. And that's, you know, Sankhya's sixth chapter. So this goal, Krishna, you know, how to get to him. Different chapters talk about different ways to approach Krishna, to understand him, like that. You know? And finally, you know, he's saying the best way is if you have a little bit of bhakti yoga, if you get a little bit of appreciation that God's a person and different saintly personalities, great acharyas, are giving us practical knowledge of how to have a relationship with him, okay, I can take up some devotional service. You know? For example, in our line, we're following Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's saying, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalao, kalao na steva na steva na steva, gatir anyacha. Where's this from? Huh? Is it? Or is it Kali Santara Upanishad?
That's the British original.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. So these are all, he's quoting, simply quoting from the Puranas, quoting from the Upanishads, quoting from the Vedas. He's not presenting anything different. All the acharyas do this. If you look at Jesus Christ, he's simply quoting, always quoting, siempre. He's always quoting from scriptural sources when he establishes some point like that. Yeah? Because the scriptures are the incarnation of God. You know, the acharyas, parampara. So same way, Lord Chaitanya is simply pointing out, this age of Kali, this is the process of religion. Other scriptures say in Satya Yuga it's meditation, in Dwapara Yuga it's fire sacrifice, and Treta Yuga it's fire sacrifice, Dwapara Yuga it's puja, deity worship. Finally, Kali Yuga, congregational glorification of God by hymns, by prayers, by chanting his holy names, like that. So then coming down, then there's Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Nartam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami. You know. Yeah. And so we can see, okay, this is coming down. Then let me try it. You know? I have some faith, some preliminary faith, the Doshvada. Okay, but I got to try it. It's obvious. It's, you know, I can hear about it, but I got to try it. So I chant on beads. I join the kirtan with the devotees. I read these books together, study, you know. And yeah, it works. You know, all these anxieties I have, they go away. My mind becomes peaceful. I know who I am, what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe not perfectly, but, you know, 80% of my problems are solved. Whereas before it was like, you know, it was 80% suffering, you know. And now I'm like, you know, quite a difference, you know. And I can see other people, they're making more progress, they're advanced, okay. You know? So then finally we take initiation, formal baptism, like that. There's a whole process, right? But, you know, Krishna's giving the basic thing here is that there is a God, you know, and he'll describe who he is. What is the basic definition of God? 10.8, 10.8. Huh? Huh? Quote a verse from Bhagavad Gita. 10.8, 10.8. Ah! Yeah. Yeah. So what is it? The first pada, what does it say? Aham sarvasya.
Yeah.
Whoever knows this worships me in devotion. So this is our basic definition of God. God is the cause of all causes. What does the Vedanta Sutra say? Janmadi yasya yataha. Everything is coming from the absolute truth. You know? What does the Christian credo say? Any Christians here? Are you a Christian? Are you accepting Lord Jesus Christ as your personal savior? Like that? Remember the credo? The Nicene Creed? We believe in. Remember that? My God, what kind of Christians are you guys? Like that. Yeah. No, this is true for the Episcopalians, the Methodists, the Lutherans, the Baptists, the Catholics, everybody. The Orthodox changed a couple words and there's a war over it. It's called the Apostles' Creed, the Parampara, I don't know what you call it, the Parampara Creed, the Parampara Samhita, or, you know, this is the basic statement of faith. Okay, now I want to see if we agree with this or not. We're going to join the Christians in fighting against the orcs. Something like that. We believe in one God. Okay. Father Almighty. Okay. baby all mischievous. Like that. Like that. Lover all unfaithful. Like that. You know? Okay. Okay. So I fight over details here. You know? We believe in one God, Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. Okay. By whom all things are created. Okay. Who for us men and for our salvation incarnated as Jesus Christ. Yeah. You accept that. Prabhupada says our guru. Yeah. Who was born of the Virgin Mary. Yeah, Prabhupada says that. You know. Then after that, who was born of the Virgin Mary, was crucified, dead, and buried, and the third day rose again and ascended into heaven, sits on the right hand of God the Father. So it's like that, we kind of, there's details after that where we just have no particular specific comment. It's a different tradition like that and stuff, you know. But on the major points, we really agree on a lot like that. It's basic monotheistic, you know, personalistic view of life and God, and accepting guru and acharya, you know. And what did Jesus Christ say? What is the essential message? All the laws and all the prophets. What again?
Love God with all your mind, heart, mind, body, soul.
And? And love your. Yeah. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your something, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know? On these, it says, on these two commandments hang all the laws and all the prophets, like that. You know, all the scriptures and all the acharyas hang on these two things. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Be a good world, huh? Yeah. So there's no difference whatsoever, you know, between the Bhagavad Gita, the basic principles. Somebody asked Prabhupada, do you find some difference with Christianity? Some newspaper reporter. He said, no, not basically. Yeah. Basically the same thing. Yeah. It's trouble. Trouble. Yeah. baby wars. Fighting over toys. Reciprocation. Okay. Yeah. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired by the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So I'm reading Carl Jung right now, a famous psychologist, his famous lectures in London, the Tavistock Lectures. And he's talking about the consciousness as a thin layer on the whole subconscious. He even makes this point. He says that I'm giving my lecture, but unless the unconscious is supplying me with the next thing to say, my whole lecture stops. Right? Yeah. Unless the unconscious, the whatever, he fights with Freud. Unless the unconscious is giving me some kind of like idea about how to proceed with the lecture, what to talk about, whole thing stops. Yeah. My work, everything else. Yeah. He's a very enlightened person compared to other people at that time. Yeah. And so this is our position. We have, you know, some activities, some work, some free will, but basically it's all happening below our level of consciousness. He was talking right at the just before the start of World War II. It hadn't happened, but Hitler had already risen to this position of being a demigod, and then Mussolini the same thing, and they were, so this whole thing was there. And he said, I predicted this 15 years ago with psychology. And I said, I saw it happening in the collective unconsciousness. Different archetypal images, he calls them, karma, was flowing this way. And people's, he said, when it's activated, he said, it doesn't matter how intelligent you are, how much willpower you have, you can't control yourself. You know? And he said, well, even when I go to Germany, he said, I'm Swiss, even I start to get involved in this. And you know, like, Heil Hitler, you know. Because it's below our level of consciousness, right? Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired by the modes of nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on the objects of sense gratification, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, a sincere person who tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga and Krishna consciousness without attachment is far superior. So we have our attachments. Anybody here free from attachments? Raise your hand. Anybody here attached? Raise your hand. Yeah. What are your attachments? A couple of them.
Children.
Huh?
Children.
Children. Thanks, kids. Yeah. And you got it.
Food.
There, over there. Upendra. What are your attachments? Are you attached to air? Yeah. So I like breathing. Yeah. But even more subtle than that is the mind. You know, one person said the mind just always has to be engaged, right? Making this plan, thinking about that, you know, repeating that, making this soap opera, that soap opera, he said, she said, they said, I'll say, then that, you know, it's like, you know, you see this going on. So try and not think for just a few minutes. Your mind just will go crazy. It'll just start screaming and yelling, everything like that. Very difficult. Arjuna says it's more difficult to control the mind than control the wind, and it goes around you front. It's just impossible, you know. So better, that's exactly what Jung was saying. Carl Jung, I'm reading him now. He's saying Freud, Adler, they're all presenting their position about what is the mind, because they're discovering the mind at that point. Actually, there wasn't much discovery at this point. And then he said they're talking about how, you know, they're free from desire, they're independent psychologists, are seeing how it is. And he said, I don't, it's not true, we're all of our attachments, you know. I'm not a perfect person. I don't try and present myself as God with my patients and analyze their minds. I have my own attachments. I become angry about things. So one lady came to him, and she was a very educated person. She was a professor. And she had different kinds of compulsions. She was doing things compulsively. And so she got to some Freudian analyst, and he had her lying on the couch, sitting behind her head, having her say things like that, not reacting, you know. And then because of this, she had started doing very, very, very disgraceful things, you know. And he could see it was simply because somebody just wasn't reacting to her emotionally and responding and saying, that's not right, you shouldn't do that, you should control yourself, or well, that's correct, that's the way you should act. You know? So when he heard like how this psychoanalysis had been allowing her to do all these stupid, you know, embarrassing things, he said he became angry and used a couple harsh words about Freudian analysis. And she said, but doctor, you're a psychologist, you shouldn't become emotional. And he said, what do you mean? I'm a person. Just because I'm a psychologist doesn't mean I don't have emotions. I don't feel about things. She said, oh, really? You know? And then very similar, one person came to him, very intelligent young man. He'd written out an entire analysis according to Freudian terms why he had this compulsion. And he had some compulsion. It was because of an incest desire with his mother. His whole analysis like that. And so Freud read it, and Jung read it, and said it was good enough to print in a psychiatric magazine like that. So he goes on and on like this, and he said, so, but the man said, I'm still not free from my attachment, from my compulsion and suffering. But I've gone through all this analysis, and he said, very interesting. He said, but you wrote this while you were on the Riviera. He said, yes. And he said, well, where did you get your money from? You know, did your parents left you with a lot of money? No, he says, I haven't arranged it with a friend. He looked at this, and he said, a lady, no? He said, well, yes, you know. And what does she do? Well, she's a school teacher. And she fell in love with you, right? Yes. And then you're taking all of her money to live on the Riviera like a pig. And she has to suffer working for a poor salary in the school. Well, what do you mean? He said, you're never going to get free from this compulsion as long as you're living like a pig, you know, and a greedy thief like that. Oh, Dr. Jung is just a moralist. He doesn't understand psychiatry. And walked out like that, you know. So no, we're all being forced to act by different modes like that, you know? But if we honestly admit them, right? This is my position, this is what's happening to me, and no impersonal and intellectual thing is going to solve this. I have attachments, I have these lower drives, this nature, you know? And to start to honestly just, you know, to do them, but sacrifice the results for Krishna, right? Then we're on the flat path of karma yoga, right? In the beginning, we can't even sacrifice all the results to Krishna. See, four for Krishna, one for me, like that, right? You know, I'm cooking the offering for Krishna. Everyone likes to eat, right? If you like to eat, raise your hand. Okay, here we go. Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. This is natural, you know. Some very basic principles of yoga. So we cook everything and offer it to Krishna. Again, my friend Bharata, he was making it in a dream, making a very nice offering to Krishna. He had a very nice sandwich on homemade bread with sprouts and avocados and cheese, and he put it on his altar, and Namo Vishnu Padaya, he looked up, and there was Krishna. And Krishna had come and was holding the sandwich, and he thought, oh my God, Krishna's actually come. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's going to eat my sandwich. You know, like that. And so, and Krishna was saying, oh, what a nice sandwich bar. Is this for me? You know. And he knew Krishna knew what he was thinking like that. Then he woke up from the dream, and you know, Sigmund Freud was there to analyze his dream. Like that, you know? But it was very obvious what the dream meant, you know. It's like, yeah, we have this, we're offering these things. In the beginning we you know, somehow or other, because of association with the Acharya, we have some desire to be like this, to give something to somebody sometime without desiring something in return, at least once a year. Like that. That's our nature. If we do that, we feel happy. I did something now without wanting something in return like that for somebody, you know. And Krishna is a supreme somebody. You can really appreciate these things. You know? So we have the desire to be a devotee. So okay, he says, follow the process of bhakti yoga, vaidhi bhakti. Do these things, and every time you'll begin to appreciate a little bit, oh, it's nice. I try and control my mind. I can do it. I can stop thinking about how it's going to taste. I can think about how Krishna is going to enjoy this. Some meditation. I make the prayers, say the prayers, follow the rules and regulations, they work. And then afterwards I feel very happy. I'm looking and Krishna's smiling. If Krishna doesn't reciprocate, you can't go on. There actually has to be some feeling that Krishna actually accepted my offering. He's actually looking happy like that, appreciating it, you know. Guru Das, one devotee said, if there's not just as much happiness when you're making the offering as when you're enjoying the results, there's something wrong with your yoga. You should be just as happy offering it to Krishna and as you are taking prasadam with Krishna. You know, I need something for my senses. My senses are so agitated now, this way and that way. I need something to calm down my passions so I can serve. It's okay. Krishna's left me. The master has left me so much. You know? Okay, this is for me. This is for you. Like that. Yeah? Oh, thank you, sir. Come on, sit down. We'll have lunch together. Oh, thank you, sir. You know? But I'll sit on the floor. No, I'll sit on the floor. Okay, well, all right, if you want to. You know? So a very nice relationship like that. Eating together. I mean, you can get the same meal in McDonald's or Chez Paris. Something like that. It's like you go to some very expensive French restaurant. It's the same thing you're eating, right? But there is the atmosphere. The waiter comes, the maître d'hôtel. He says, "Bonjour, monsieur et madame," like that. Petit Pierre, Josefina, you know. And they pull the table out and sit you there and push it in. You look around, and other people just like you, elegant people, and violins and music, you know. And they show you the menu, like that. And then the waiter talks to you, and you know everything, all like that, you know. So it's, you know, $50 right, for dinner like that. Whereas you go to McDonald's, it's $5. You know? Same thing. What is it? It's the emotional relationship, you know, of giving gifts, receiving, talking, love like that. You know? So this is our yoga. You know, whatever in the beginning, whatever you do, whatever attachments you have, use them for Krishna. Right? One devotee. Finish off here. One story. Udareta. Udareta. He was a paratrooper in Vietnam. And he was the most passionate guy on earth. You know, he's about the same size as Aja, and maybe a little bigger, not much. But he's like a lizard. He has these muscles like, you know, like a, you know, like a crocodile or something. You know, so he was trained by the U.S. Air Force to jump out of airplanes at 5,000 feet and hope the parachute would open and go down with machine gun blazing like that. And, you know, trained as a trained fighter killer. You know, so he became a devotee. And he always was getting in fights with devotees. He was so passionate and everything like that, you know. He used to practice in the temple in San Francisco, jumping off the roof like that to keep fit, you know, so on. So finally one day, the story is, the day, it was Gorpurnima, big festival. And it was, I guess, a Saturday night or something. So about 1 o'clock in the morning, some German biker guys, they'd been chased out of every bar in Munich or whatever it was. We're going home on their motorcycles, and they passed by the Hare Krishna temple. They thought, well, let's have a little more fun, you know. So they drove their motorcycles right through the front window of the temple like that. Yeah. And they're in the lobby. But it was Gorpurnima, so there were a lot more devotees in the temple than normal. And this big fight broke out in the lobby, and the brahmacharis were in their gumshas and their pajamas. And these guys had, you know, thick leather jackets and helmets and, I guess, some kind of clubs and stuff, you know. And so the devotees weren't doing very well. But Udareta was there, right? So he came to the balcony about like this, right? And looked down, and he had a big iron bar, of course. You know, he always keeps some weapon around, you know. So he looked down, and he said, oh, thank you, Krishna. You know. So Krishna will do this. I mean, whatever your particular attack, if you're sincere, he'll change your karma. He'll change your karma. You know, well, maybe not completely. You won't grow red hair or something, but he'll change. Okay, your karma is to be a fighter, you know. Okay, so you can fight for me. So he jumped off the balcony screaming Jai Sri Ram or something. Jai Sri Ram! You know, and he eliminated the first biker landing like that. Landed on the first one. Then you hold the club like this. That's how you hold it. You step forward. And you aim this knuckle towards a person's earlobe. Okay. Then he staggers. He's a big guy, right? Then the second blow, you go for the solar plexus. Okay. The third blow, you drop down and hit the knee. Okay. That's eliminated, right? Okay. Now the guy behind you, you got him. Okay. So he was trained by the U.S. Air Force to fight people like that. He also broke one brahmachari's nose. That kind of thing. You know, but these biker guys are running out of the temple like that, and the devotees inherited 6 motorcycles. So this is, you know, karma yoga like that. And afterwards, you say, okay, now I'm king of this temple. I fought for it. I have the right. No, karma yoga means you say, you know, call me again if you need me, like that. You know, yeah. Right? Isn't that? Yeah. Like that. Yeah. But that's karma yoga. You know? You have a right to do your service. And that's what most people want. They want to do something, you know? Not to enjoy the results. You know? So you're doing something, you're active, and something you can do. Okay, then Krishna gives you some of the fame, some of the prestige, some of the profits, something like that, and some of the reactions too, you know. So you begin to understand that karma is not so great, you know. Let me surrender it all to Krishna, like that. And you become purified by karma yoga, karma yoga. And as you become purified, you realize that I'm not this body. Nothing in this world relates to me. It's all in terms of the body, you know. And then, well, who am I? And that's when you start to meditate on Krishna, dhyana yoga, and finally bhakti yoga. You're trying to reciprocate with Krishna. I'm cooking for Krishna. Krishna's, it's what Krishna wants, I know. Vaidhi bhakti. And now some feeling. I'm offering like this, and Krishna's appreciating. Oh, you're having some feelings, some sentiments, like that. Yeah? So, any questions, comments, complaints? I'm probably going to use. There he is. Yes, sir. Yeah.
What is subconscious? Is that the super soul?
See, everybody was developing their models at that time. You know, actually, there's a different thing. In the history of Western psychology, there's this comment that from the time of the Greeks until the time of Shakespeare, people just really were didn't think. There was no introspective literature. It was all morality plays. It's how you're supposed to act. It was all just kind of in forms of life should be followed in terms of certain activities. You should do these things this way, that way. But there was no like philosophical speculation, introspection. So Hamlet was somewhere the first real play where someone was thinking about who am I and why should I do this and what's right and what's wrong and, you know, thinking about these things like that, you know. And then it began to develop. And so many mental illnesses, but, you know, he's possessed by devils or he's crazy. They just put a chain around your neck and chain you to the wall in the insane asylum in Bedlam. You know, toss some slop in front of you twice a day, you know, until you died of something, you know. So there was no real appreciation for how to deal with mental illness to a large degree. Then somehow or other, Freud was the first person who came along with the idea of the... Touch your head this way. There you go. Okay, yeah. So, with the unconscious, the subconscious, the preconscious, the id, and the ego, and the superego. He had all these things there, you know. And so then Jung's philosophy a little different. Adler's a little different like that. But yes, there are many things that come out in dreams which will indicate why we have acting a certain way like that, you know, or through hypnosis, or through art, different techniques, or through the word association test. I say a word, you just respond with whatever word comes into your mind, or the ink blot test. So there's something there which is below the conscious. When we get to that, we discover like, yeah. So a booty, in our analysis, is booty, like that. And so we're conscious of our senses. An animal may even, well, sometimes we too, we also forget our senses. If we're really hungry, we're eating, it's just like, you know, we may be even sticking the fork in our face or like that. We just don't care. It's just like, you know, we're so hungry that we're just absorbing the taste and reaction in our body, the sense objects. And someone says, come to your senses. And you say, well, thank you, you know. Yeah. And you realize, oh, I'm actually, by doing this activity, I'm cutting my finger, you know. I was absorbing the sense objects. Now I come back to my senses and I'm conscious of my senses. And human senses are pretty elevated. And if you have human senses, they're actually, you know, pretty much a lot of intelligence. So the next level is to come to your thoughts, manas, then come to behind the thoughts is buddhi, the intelligence, the Buddha, right? Yeah. Then at that point, the buddhi again can be, you know, how much, this is where he's making this argument that Freud was pretty much dealing with the subconscious as a fixed static unit, whereas he was saying it was a totally dynamic thing. In certain circumstances, I'm conscious of some things. Other circumstances, I become unconscious of them, like that, you know? And he was saying that our European civilization is very, you know, what's the word, rigid thinking. He says it'll take a psychoanalyst sometimes weeks to work with a person to the point where they can become conscious of certain aspects of their mind, which he said every Oriental person in India and China is always conscious of, like that, you know? So different cultures have different things. You can see that Europeans are just like, you know, just not in touch with their own emotions, sentiments, ideas, motivations. They don't know why they're doing things, you know, like that. You know, many times. That's why they can have these ghastly, you know. You know, I was in India one time, and two political groups were fighting over who had control of this landing spot on the river. and they're fighting each other like that. Then one guy got knocked to the ground like that, and the other guy, political party guy, picked him up and said, "Are you okay?" He said, "Yes." And they started fighting again like that. And it's like when you fight with your brothers and sisters. You can be fighting with your sister like mad, pulling her hair and screaming, yelling, and yelling. But if something actually happens to her, you say, "Are you all right?" "Yes." "Okay." You know? Because you know, ultimately we're all part of the same family. But it's like, it's an opportunity to really just go crazy and express my anger and emotions. And they know, I'll do the same thing, you know. I mean, try and keep a little perspective on it, you know. So in India, there's always this kind, in Asia, this kind of sentiment of humanity, which in some ways in Europe can get lost. Just do, you know, horrible, you know, wars like that, ghastly, you know, yeah, innocent people, like that. So the subconscious and Jung's model is, in both of them is Buddhi,
is that? Does modern psychology have any kind of super soul or anything close to
that? Oh my God, again, the different schools, different groups like that, an improvisational theater, and I was asking Reinhardt, the head of the department, do you use improvisation for the theater by Viola Spolin. So yeah, that's the classic. And it was just being written when I was started theater like that. And it's a whole technique to get in contact with your higher self. Again, they don't know exactly what it is. An actor performs his work with his mind, body, and words. A sannyasi serves Krishna with his mind, body, and words. Sannyasi means paramatma, realization. You can distinguish the mind, the body, the words and the mind from yourself at this point. And then you're coming in contact with something. You know? For example, one game, you divide in two groups, this is in the book, and the captain comes forward from each group and you have some concept like winter. And they have to go back with paper and just, you know, draw things, and their group has to guess, winter, you know, snowflakes, frosty, this domain. So it's a way to be able to make concepts, communicate them to something practical. Because when you're on the stage, you have to be able to, like, improvisation is come up with something which will communicate to the audience that it's winter time, like that, you know? Yeah? Yeah. And so you start to develop this ability to see within yourself, you know, and these inspirations, these feelings like that. Yeah. So it's paramatma. So psychology, one psychoanalyst is calling it the psychologist within. You know, when you get in touch with that psychologist within you, you can like touch your patient, appreciate them like that. You know? Yeah. Mm. Holy Spirit in Christian tradition, like that, yeah. Which is sometimes being portrayed as being feminine in some cultures. Subhadra. Mm. Yeah. But in general, in school psychology, boy, you know. Yeah. Different kinds. The behaviorist just in try and work in terms of just reactions. Forget about what you're thinking, anything else. Every time you want to smoke a cigarette, okay, smoke a cigarette, but slap your hand hard 3 times before you do it. Okay. And you'll modify your behavior to hell with all the subtle things. Psychology means to modify your behavior. It's like rats. You know? Yeah. Different schools of psychology. Yeah. Sometimes they're Christians too. You meet people who believe in God and you have a Christian psychology, but it's kind of an atheistic profession in general. And it's kind of like, you know, it's just that they're focusing on this level. Yeah. So, okay? Yeah.
What about the super ego? That sounds similar.
No, in Freudian terms, there's the unconscious. Now, the unconscious includes the id. And the id is all these primordial incest desires and, you know, all these horrible, ghastly things like that. So Jung was saying, my God, he said, why call it something separate? It's a part of the unconscious. He said all these perverted sexual desires are all just infantile. You know, we kind of go beyond them. He said, I just get come bored to death with discussing these things. Okay, you have these desires and then adjust them. Forget it. They're more interesting things in life, you know. But he thinks that Freud was kind of obsessed with these things. So on. So he said, okay, some people are Freudian patients. They go to him. Some come to me. You know, like that. So then as the id starts to manifest itself and with these desires, then the superego then manifests as part of the unconscious, and it chastises you whenever the id starts to manifest itself like that and keeps it suppressed. So the superego is suppressing the id. and the ego is sitting here in the middle of all these things like that. And of course, the superego may be coming from the parents, you know, teaching you like this and that. You know, it's probably greed. Yeah, he's on the right track in some ways. He's understanding his sexual motivation, these subtle things like that, you know, and behind the gross activities. You know, superego. Yeah. Yeah. It may be related also to the super souls giving this advice, how to do it, not to do these things. There's, you know, very clear, Bhagavad Gita gives a very clear explanation of what is material nature. What is the mind? What is the intelligence? What are the senses? There's a hierarchy of the senses, how they react to nature. What is time? It's very simple, very clear. Yeah. Yeah. And Jung was very intelligent, very nice person. He went to all over the world investigating cultures. In India, what he got was Patanjali's yoga system. He came in contact with that and appreciated it like that. Yeah. Yeah. So we're very fortunate somebody has come to give us this culture and philosophy. Yeah. Tomorrow night, we're back with the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Friday, we're going to finish Bhagavad Gita. And Saturday, Sunday program. Yeah. I want to say last night was a very nice program. I want to thank everybody who's participating in it. Our producer, Ayush Royal, and his assistant, Shihari. No, you know, as a producer, you realize that in the end, my God, I just kind of did a little bit of work. I took the leadership this time, and it was okay. Or it wasn't okay. Never going to do that again. Or else, like, okay, but I can see I have my limits, my nature, and okay, you're fine. You do experiments, right? Take responsibility for some program, and okay, you know, find your position, discover your karma, right? I'm not a very good leader, but I'm addicted to it. Okay, so I got to do it, you know, understand my abilities, nature. And last night, very good. So many people came and were very impressed by the quality, you know. And a lot more work, right, to improve it. This is one kind of preaching, and I think here in Boise, the art, dance, drama, music is very natural. Especially for Boise. Boise seems like a nice kind of gentle place where people like to see other people doing things. Like I say, it's not good for like the great Lollapalooza or these big, slick, you know, high-tech stage shows coming in. It's kind of like what they like to see is people, you know, like themselves doing things and putting it on with some quality. And they like to see family and their art and music and stuff like that, you know. So it's a good place to develop these things, I think. Yeah, very nice. And I think the university is very willing to work, you know, back and forth. They're going to do Shakuntala next year. So you can actually maybe even read it, you know. Like a Krishna conscious commentary. It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, no? Right? Yeah. Who is it? Bart Maharaj. Who's the mother? Huh? Somebody. The daughter is Shakuntala, I think. And then she comes in front of the king and says, "This is your daughter." Then, you know, I think somehow or other he has a voice from the air, declare it so nobody will doubt it, like this and that. I think the play is actually called The Recognition of Shakuntala, the actual drama like that. So it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. So you kind of, again, you focus on what they're doing. You're very nice. Understand it, read it, go there, get involved. One lady's doing her master's thesis on it. Yeah. And, you know, it can become a whole, actually it can begin to become a whole, like, city event. Right? You know? Like that. There's drama. Yeah. So what can Swoop Damodar Maharaj and probably preaching at this level? And then there's a big effect, you know, cultural level like that. But it requires people working together, it requires long range plans. You know? And then the effect is very big. You know, like that. So chant a little more here. What chant you chant? You chant there. You're good. You're a good chatter. You're also addicted too, aren't you? No. Yeah, okay.